Welcome back to Reflections. I have to sort of wait for Hector to give me the little nod, you know. Welcome back to Reflections. My guest today is Rosana Matienzo Carrion. And as I said before the pause, I like to always start out with having my guests give on their own instead of my starting the guests and this and that. Your background and you know, where are you, your family, your education, and your profession, and what you've done, you know, and it gives you. I might interrupt a little bit because you're missing. I think you're missing something, or I don't understand something. But you know, give us a little bit of background on you.
Okay, well, I am I'm a born Puerto Rican from many generations here in Puerto Rico, which I'm very proud of. And I've always loved words. I used to have a collection of books, which was my mother's, which were called Libros Araluce. And it was a collection of these little books, but it had simplified all of the classics, including Shakespeare and Don Quixote and all the Greek myths. And so I was always in love with reading. Mm-hmm. With reading ever since I can remember.
And they read to you a lot, I should imagine.
Well, more than that, it was the example, because my mother read like anybody I've ever seen.
See.
I would always see her with a book in her hands.
Right, okay.
So I learned to read, and I used to go to bed very late as a little kid with reading, and I used to have a room with my sister who would tell me, please, you know, just turn off the light because I cannot sleep because you read until 1 o'clock in the morning, and I must have been 8 or 9.
Right.
So I really loved reading, and then I went on to college, to Goucher College, and I studied literature. I studied English literature.
How big is Goucher College?
Goucher is a small, at the time, now it's a different school, but at the time I wanted to go to Sarah Lawrence because I wanted to be a writer.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was a very liberal school. And
your parents did not allow
it. My parents didn't allow it. So they sent me to this all-girls school, which was okay, but I didn't really love it. Actually, I got very sick. I had hepatitis and type B, and I was I had to leave my third year. I had to come to Puerto Rico because I was very sick. And then I was allowed to, the last year, I was allowed to study in the University of Puerto Rico in the Hispanics department, which was wonderful.
Yeah.
It had Arcadio Diaz Quiñones, who was a professor at Princeton, and it had several other professors, which were really...
Cruz Moncloa, sound familiar? No?
Arcadio Diaz Quiñones.
Sí, I remember. I took a course
with Moncloa. Cruz Moncloa. I had Piri Luis and her husband, and I had one of the López Barals.
Mercedes, probably.
Yes. Yeah. It was a different school, and it was really... What was his name? That he wrote González. González. He wrote Santa Claus a la Cuchilla. I learned a lot of Puerto Rican literature.
Sí,
anyway,
sí.
I don't think it was wasted, and I got my credits, and I graduated from Goucher anyway.
Okay.
And then I studied law, like you. I studied law.
But you went to Hunter College.
Yes, I also went to Hunter College.
You got a master's.
And
it was in English literature. Both places.
Both places. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there it was also interesting.
But then you got the Spanish in Puerto Rico for that year. Yeah, that's interesting.
Exactly. Okay. But at Hunter College, I think New York per se is an education.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there for 5 years, and during that time I was at Hunter, and I think it really opened my mind to many, many things. I remember I had a teacher who we read Lord of the Flies. It's such a simple book, and he made this like a therapy group. It really made you introspect about how you really felt about nature and the impulses and the controls. I thought that course was so enhancing, such a good learning experience. And I also had a course with a critic of the New York Times of the theater.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember his name right now. It's Tom something, and that was fascinating because you would have the chance to go see a play, and then you would make your own critique, and he was a professional at that. So you really learned what you were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And anyway, I finally studied law, and again, it was words. And I remember one time I took a course with Vasquez Bote, which was a Spaniard that taught obligaciones and contracts.
Mm-hmm.
And he was very difficult to understand. And had written a couple of books, and I took a test and I got a B. And he calls me to his office, and I was really upset, not because of the B, but of him calling me to the office. So he called me and I said, "What are you calling me for?" And he said, "Well, you know, you have an ability to write. And if you ever get into a problem, into trouble, just start talking because you'll get out of it."
Okay, yeah.
So,
But why did he give you a B?
Well, because really, I didn't understand that class so well, let me tell you.
Okay,
so the B was well-deserved. I didn't deserve an A.
Yeah.
But, and it was, actually, I perhaps didn't even deserve a B.
Okay.
But it was interesting that he saw the other thing in another aspect.
Right.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, throughout my education, I've had that inspiration from many, many teachers to keep on writing.
Right.
And
there was a story, I don't remember the person, but he was describing that he was taking a course with Fernando Pico,
the historian. He was a great man.
And he gave him an incomplete, and he went to see him. And Fernando Pico, my wife's uncle,
yes,
Titi Nene, because he was very young, and he says, "I gave you an incomplete because you can do so much better than
what you did,
and I want you to just concentrate more and finish this the way I know you can do it." And he said it was just so revolutionary that somebody, you know, was seeing that you have much more, you know, talent and much more ability than you're demonstrating in this kind of a test. It was something he had written. So that's kind of like, you know.
Well, what's the course about? What's Fernando Pico's course?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What was his course
about? Oh, it was history of, you know, Puerto Rico history.
History of Puerto Rico.
Yeah, in the UP. Yeah.
I admire him a lot.
Yeah. So you practiced law?
I practiced law for a while. I even used to go to Boston and argue cases, although that made me so nervous. I think I was very immature at that point in my life, frankly.
Mm.
But it did make me nervous. But I did argue a case in front of Torruella, and one judge that went finally to the Supreme Court, Breyer.
Stephen Breyer.
Exactly. I would like appeal work because it also gave me an opportunity to write.
Yeah, it's going before the judges. That's always nervous. You never know.
That would wreck my nerves. I would get such a headache just to think that I had to talk to these people, and they were really very demanding.
Right.
And for good reason.
Mm-hmm.
And then I practiced family law. I practiced some family law, which was at times nerve-wracking because it's such a huge emotional thing.
Right.
But then I've been writing for the last 10 years, 10, 15 years I've been writing. And I always see law, you know, I keep my license alive. Do you keep your license alive?
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. But I really love writing, and I love the way that you can express how you said, how you feel through your characters.
Right.
And give a glimpse of human nature, which is so versatile and so unpredictable.
Complicated, you say in your book. And so one of your preach persons say,
Todos
somos muy complicados. Nadie realmente sabe quiénes somos.
And that's why you cannot judge.
Yeah.
One of the sayings at the beginning of the book says, I'm not what I am, and it's something Shakespeare is from Iago, from Otello, but and most people really don't show their true face. A lot of people, they're not authentic, and it's not that they're bad. It's just that it's like a Chinese box.
But also from what you say is that not only not what they don't show what they really are, but part of the problem is they don't know what they are. Most of us, you know.
Oh, my Lord.
And we don't really completely know who we are. We're completely changing. Yeah.
That's such a wonderful comment, because it's so difficult to know who you are.
Yeah.
It's so very difficult.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of reflection and introspection to really understand your nature and what makes you tick, and the relationship with spirituality and God makes a big difference. And most people cannot even, well, dare not go there because it's really a very, it's a very awesome place.
How many ways did I ask Don Felix? He says, are you religious? And he says, well, if it's believing in life, I'm religious. If it's going to Mass, I'm not. And then he completely changes the topic.
This exactly. Well, most people, I think, do that.
Yeah.
Most people really going to spirituality is a challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
It is a challenge, but most people really refrain even from really understanding that we have very many levels.
Yeah. But let me. Okay, so you're I think with that the brings you to be the novelist that you are. How did you decide to write this third book on the Normandy? What inspired you?
Well, the hotel, like I said at the beginning, has been a source of inspiration for many artists.
Did you sort of see it one day and said, I would like to write?
The topics that you want to write about, you almost know since you are a little girl.
A little by little. So it wasn't something like aha. It was a development.
But I remember when I was about in 19, the Normandy was already closed. And one of the times that it was closed, of the several times it was closed, and I entered the Normandy and through two boards, and I went to see what it was like. And I walked into the place, and it was something really crazy to do because I could have found a whole bunch of things.
So serpents
and
vagrants that attack you.
Exactly. And I took a chair. I took a chair, which I was. That's how young and I was, because the chair was very heavy. It was a chair made the same way as one of the chairs in the steamship in the Normandy in the ship. Which was
one of these, maybe the caoba from the Dominican Republic.
Very heavy, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I took that chair, and I was living in Old San Juan at that point. So I took the chair, and I lived with that chair by the side of my bed for a long time. And also, I have a great grandfather who loved cinema. And he used to take movie films when in the 1920s. And one of those movie films was in my house. And it was already in the form that you stick into the machine and it goes ahead. And my great-grandfather had taken a picture of Momoano, of Félix Benítez's wife, dancing. And so I saw her. I saw her with this little mouth and very red. Mm. And she was holding a dress, like a typical French dress on the sides. And she was dancing and with her blonde, disheveled hair. So
Raimundo, what's his name? Ismael takes Raimundo up to the suite when they're still there, and they start looking at some of these films and some of these pictures, and it sounds like one of the pictures sounds like the one that
exactly,
you're talking
about. Exactly. Yeah, so. And I also wanted to make people to realize that at this time, movies were beginning. It was the beginning of the theater and of the cinema. So Hernández Mayoral's book, which he wrote a book on movies, and I use it as a source. About theater houses.
Yeah.
But
in terms of the movies, are, first of all, of course, She Marries Cobian.
Exactly.
Was the movie before Caribbean cinemas was the movie magnet in Puerto Rico. But,
correct.
But you have a statement on... Your incredible statement on movies that is for men is the emotional eunuch.
I love that.
So that in the darkness do not have to show their intimacy.
They don't even have to talk. I mean, they perhaps can hold your hand and stare at the movie. But what can be more sterile than that?
I kind of laugh when I read it and I said.
But it's true. I all the time my husband would invite me to the movies. I don't want to go to the movies. Not even now. Now, less than before, because now I can watch the movies from my bed and just sit there and watch Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
Yeah.
But the movies are really the cave for emotional eunuchs.
That'll give you an idea. She mentioning things, you know, these little things that are kind of whether it's, you know, Quixote and Dulcinea come with Tennyson and Lancelot, and you know, there's all these different things with these different characters philosophizing and making these statements on all kinds of things. Okay, but so it was the development of the idea of the Normandy was very
natural,
continuous, natural. This yes. and that. And then the decision on the point of view where basically use Raimunda
as a narrator.
Roses Benitez.
Benitez
Roses.
Excuse me.
You use her as the narrator and how she comes. And of course, she's a great philosopher. And with her,
she's young.
Her uncle, yeah, she's young.
With evolution.
And going through her whole, during that 10 years, going through her educational experiences and all kinds of experiences and ending up with Covian. But how?
Ending up with Covian, okay, correct.
Now, how in that process, how do you decide that's going to be the your point of view, that's how you're going to insert yourself in, instead of a historical document, and it's going to be a novel, and it's going to be through the eyes of this young person who's also developing and philosophizing and learning and who's related to someone. One place it says he was my second uncle or my
exactly.
fourth. Or my fourth.
Well, that's Puerto Rico.
Or my fourth primo. He was related in some way. And then apparently, you know, and of course.
That's Puerto Rico, but Don Felix could care less.
You know, no, he could. He never, you know, she says that she was there and he was like I wasn't there, you know.
Exactly.
But how did you decide to use Raimunda as your way to convey this story and this history? And
well, I cannot credit myself fully for that because, you know, La Fiesta del Chivo, the mm-hmm. Vargas Llosas, mm-hmm. he writes that, which I think is a wonderful book. He writes about with her, his narrator is Urania.
Okay.
And she starts with Urania, the story. And I think his Urania is the weakest part of the story. Mm-hmm. So I was very aware of that. And I wanted to make Raimunda a strong part of the story.
Okay.
But I really sort of copied that technique.
Okay.
Raimunda, sure enough, means somebody that teaches sabiduría.
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Mm-hmm. Someone who teaches wisdom. That's the name of Raimunda. So it's not an ad hoc that we call her Raimunda.
Okay.
And I feel that
Hector is waving again. So we'll get back when
no problem.
Why you chose Raimunda and then you know basically some other aspects of how you developed this novel.
Perfect.
Okay, so this is you're listening to Rosana Matienzo Carrion, the author of A Bordo del Normandy, my guest today, and this is Reflections. Your host Jorge Gonzalez. We'll be back right after the pause.